Welcome to Trailblazers, where we explore the inspiring journeys of entrepreneurs and industry leaders who are redefining success and making a lasting impact. These game changers are driving progress in our region and around the world. Welcome to another episode of Trailblazers. With me in the studio is a guest who has spent more than three decades at the intersection of entrepreneurship, manufacturing, leadership, and legacy. Francis Brunel is the founder and president of Accelerated Manufacturing Brokers, one of the nation's premier firms specializing exclusively in the sale and acquisition of manufacturing companies. Her mission extends far beyond transactions. She has dedicated her career to helping preserve American manufacturing by connecting business owners ready to transition their life's work with the next generation of entrepreneurs who will carry those legacies forward. What began as a career in industrial auctions evolved into a nationally recognized mergers and acquisitions firm serving manufacturers across the country. Along the way, Fran has become a respected voice in manufacturing, succession planning, entrepreneurship, and leadership. She has been recognized among the most influential women in mergers and acquisitions and has built a reputation grounded in integrity, transparency, service, and faith. Today, we'll discuss her remarkable leadership journey, the lessons she's learned through adversity, the future of American manufacturing, the power of acquisition as a growth strategy, and how faith continues to guide her both personally and professionally. Fran, welcome to Trailblazers.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Yeah, thank you. Fran, your journey didn't begin in mergers and acquisitions. It actually began in the industrial auction business. Looking back, what were some of the defining moments that led you to where you are today?
Probably one of the most important defining moments was the very first time I was asked to sell a client's company. So in the auction world, you're seeing a client, the seller of a machine tool, one time. Mm-hmm. But companies that were buying from my firm were growing, thriving manufacturers that were constantly swapping out their machine tools for a newer brand, larger capacity model, mm-hmm. It just to increase throughput. So we were seeing them on a regular basis. And at one point in time, one of them came to me and there was a medical crisis. They needed to exit quickly, but they were not appropriate for an auction. They were a wonderful medical instrument manufacturer with cash flow, staff. It was totally inappropriate for an auction. He had a growing, thriving company, and he said, "You're going to sell my company." And I had never thought about selling companies in mergers and acquisitions. And I kind of respectfully declined. And I did. We were making great money in the auction field, and I had never done any mergers and acquisitions. But he said, "Fran, think about it. Who you're marketing machine tools to are companies that are likely buyers of my business." And very reluctantly took the project, began to market him. It was interesting. When I said to him, "I don't do this for a living," his response was, "Yes, you do, kid. You just don't realize it yet." And as I look back, that was really a gift from God.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it right away. I kept plowing down the road of doing auctions. Probably the second time, the same thing happened. In this case, it wasn't someone that needed to exit quickly. It was someone that needed to merge with a much larger company very quickly because they had taken on orders that they could not facilitate the production of. Mm. And he was afraid that his reputation was going to be ruined. Mm. And that project was so much fun to work on. And at that juncture, I started saying, wow, there's likely really something here. Mm-hmm. And as I looked at the marketplace, I realized that there was a gap in the market. You have Main Street brokers who are selling a dry cleaner, a restaurant, a small business. And then you had investment bankers who were selling businesses that were hundreds of millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. But in that lower middle market space, particularly in manufacturing, there was no one working nationally in that space. Mm. And so there was a gap in the market, and I set out to address it.
And talk about a powerful pivot.
Yeah.
Heaven sent, no less. And you've shared that some of your earliest mergers and acquisitions opportunities came from manufacturers who trusted you, some of the pivotal moments in their lives. I know you and I have kind of talked off air, and we have talked about how, you know, sometimes the divestor or the desire to sell is basically comes from health issues or what have you. How did those experiences shape your vision for what accelerated manufacturing brokers would eventually become? Can you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. I think as we started to work with manufacturers and gain a reputation as being a manufacturing specialist in the lower middle market, what we started to see was commonality in their request and their concerns. Mm. So the people that were coming to us, for the most part, were ready to retire and very concerned about maintaining confidentiality. Mm. They were concerned about their staff. They wanted the jobs to remain in the community, right? So there was common thread there. And as we leaned in and paid attention to what was being said to us, a process starts to develop where you're really listening to what they want and helping them to attain that. Later, much later, we began to help companies merge. They weren't ready to retire. Mm-hmm. But they hit a growth plateau that they did not know how to get beyond. Sometimes it was a knowledge base. Sometimes it was investment needed. Sometimes they just didn't know what was needed, but they just know that they hit a ceiling that they needed to get beyond. Mm. So we would start to marry them with a larger manufacturer to help them get beyond whatever issues they were facing.
Yeah, and it sounds like a little bit of strategic planning alongside that selling manufacturer goes along with it. And so AMB, Accelerated Manufacturing Brokers, has evolved significantly since its founding. What were some of the biggest strategic decisions you made that helped transform the company into what is now a nationally recognized firm? Because it's evolved over time.
It has evolved over time. So I think there were a few significant things. The first was to say goodbye to the auction industry because it's a very different world. And as we started down the road of mergers and acquisitions and started to hit our stride, we grew over 400% 3 years in a row.
Wow.
And so we really had to, I was running two divisions for a while and I had to say goodbye to one. Mm. And I think the other thing that really helped us develop into what we are today was I did not come out of mergers and acquisitions. And therefore, I questioned everything. Mm. Why is it done this way? Why does it have to be done this way? Mm-hmm. Does it make sense to do it this way? Like one of the things related to that is it was a consistent concern of my clients, confidentiality. Mm-hmm. Every pitch book, people call them SIMs, confidential information memorandum. I call it a pitch book. It's what it is. I don't like being like everybody else. But everyone I've ever seen anywhere in the country. You have to sign a non-disclosure to get it. But every other firm, they identify who and where the client is. Mm. I'm like, that's almost the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Mm-hmm. Because for manufacturers, the disclosure that their business is on the market, if the employees get wind of it before they know, okay, my boss is selling to this company because they're larger, they're going to give us better benefits, they're going to keep the company here, mm-hmm. right? Could be disastrous. If the employees start jumping ship, it affects your valuation. Mm-hmm. Sometimes if your customers are finding out you're for sale, it could be financially devastating. So we started looking at things like, here's how the industry does it. It doesn't make sense. Let's change it. Mm. And then the other thing that I think was really significant in our growth was how we value companies. Mostly, they're backward looking, mm-hmm. right? Yes, they do future discounted cash flows, but it's all numbers based for the most part. Mm-hmm. So we started saying, okay, that doesn't tell the whole story. Mm. What about their certifications? What about their company culture? Mm-hmm. What about how they invest in their employees? What about the difficulty of the metals they're working with? How many people in the country do what they do and can do it on a sustained basis? Mm-hmm. Exactly. That changes the valuation. So we started doing our own thing with valuation, ignoring what other people were doing. And what started to, eventually we developed our own software to assist us and more formalize this. But, you know, we started to be asked to value a company after a CPA firm did. Mm. And we were like, you're worth double that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would say that probably most of the valuations, that manufacturers might be seeking are coming from, say, like a wealth advisor or a CPA or, you know, somebody who maybe isn't, their trade isn't necessarily M&A versus
right.
you, who was dedicated to it. Yeah. And then specifically in the manufacturing industry.
There's science behind what they're doing, mm-hmm. right?
Like, right.
I completely understand.
Right.
And many of my clients go to a CPA firm first before coming to us. But what that CPA firm doesn't do is sell manufacturing businesses on the open market. So they do not know what the market will bear.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Nor are they, I would imagine, you know, evaluating culture and other,
right.
you know, anecdotal information that is key to the success of a business in truth, you know. Manufacturing has long been called the backbone of the American economy. From your perspective, what makes manufacturing specifically so important in our nation's future?
To me, mm-hmm. this is a national security issue. Like, it doesn't get better than that sentence.
Mm.
COVID taught us that.
Mm-hmm.
We were relying on China for raw materials used in pharmaceuticals.
Mm.
That can never be.
Mm-hmm.
You do not want equipment that is used to protect our country made by countries that do not have our best interest at heart.
Mm-hmm.
And, you just think about moving through life on a daily basis. Any culture that is not manufacturing their own products is relying on other countries. And that can change with the wind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's too much happening geopolitically and so forth. It is a national security issue.
That's a really good point. I'm going to shift gears here a little bit. Many people see business ownership as a financial journey, but you've often spoken about legacy and stewardship and preserving what entrepreneurs have built. Why is finding the right buyer often just as important as achieving the right valuation?
The right buyer will always have a valuation in line with what it should be if they're the right buyer. But as you think about it, speaking of people that are retiring, as they're aging, something begins to happen in your thought process. Mm-hmm. You want to know that the business is going to live beyond you. You want to know that your people that helped you to be able to retire are going to be well taken care of, future opportunity, that a buyer is going to invest in them. And the other thing is, so it affects more than the retiring manufacturing owner. It affects the community that the business is located in. You know, the National Association of Manufacturers always has current statistics available on how much a manufacturing company, it's not just what they add to GDP, it's how they affect everything around them. Mm-hmm. The workers live in the area, pay taxes in the area, go to restaurants in the area. So it adds to the culture of a community, incredibly important. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how we view it. And I think it sounds like the crux of your question may lean into a little bit the type of buyer. Is that where you're going with this? Yeah. So any M&A professional can find a private equity that wants to acquire a lower middle market manufacturing company. You could spit into the wind and find that. What's harder is finding that buyer that's going to align culturally, that's going to respect the legacy of the founder or the seller, but has the business acumen to grow that business beyond what they could or sometimes were not willing to. As you approach retirement, sometimes you don't take the same level of risk, right? So finding that right mix of price, culture, business acumen, that's a little bit harder, right? So, and it's important to all of the stakeholders, not just the seller, you know, but the high majority of our clients are hugely concerned about the who of it. And listen, it's not that private equity is bad. I don't want to leave you with that impression, but private equity is what it is. They have a defined fund life cycle where, depending on where they are in the fund, they're legally obligated to sell and return the investment
and have an exit strategy
and have it. It's a predetermined exit. So what we have actually sold to private equity, but when we did, the people running the private equity were an investor in their fund to a huge degree, which kind of changes. They're not just playing with other people's money, right?
They have skin in the game.
They have skin in the game, and it changes the quality of the decisions that they make. So,
and sometimes that's all that matters greatly to, you know, the selling manufacturer. You know, the Lehigh Valley actually has a pretty robust, two of our target sectors are dedicated to manufacturing. So we have a big manufacturing culture. We also have a really nice entrepreneurship culture here. And a lot of businesses have been built here. Many businesses operate here. Something I heard recently in some business exchanges was that an entrepreneur had said, we tried entrepreneurship, but we're now looking at, you know, acquiring a company because we feel like that's the natural next best step because it's established. What advice would you give to those that are either going at it alone or perhaps are partnering with a group that maybe aren't private equity per se, but are looking to become an entrepreneur, building upon a legacy that exists that they can grow from?
Yeah. So I think that acquisition of an established company mm-hmm. with a cash flow, with a customer base, there's less risk. It's faster than trying to grow something organically. Mm-hmm. So at one time we sold a tool and die manufacturer in North Carolina. We sold it to a gentleman who was exiting corporate America. Mm. He had been at the helm, the CEO of a publicly traded manufacturing company.
Oh, wow.
He had business development skills like nobody's business, but he was doing it for other people. And so he started to explore whether or not it made sense to start a business. Ultimately, he landed on acquisition as the appropriate path forward. So he used some leverage. There was an acquisition loan involved, but the company had cash flow. And they were working, doing tool and die work for major pharmaceutical production companies. Like he leapt ahead like 15 years through acquisition. Mm. So,
because the IP's created, the legacy's there, the customers are there. What advice would you give manufacturers that are, let's say they wanted to call you tomorrow? What does that conversation look like? Is it, your financials have to be at a certain point. You have to have a succession plan in place. What does that conversation look like, Fran?
So it depends what the need is. Mm-hmm. Are they seeking to retire, or are they stuck in growth where they've hit a plateau that they don't know how to get beyond, right? So I think either way, what you have to understand as a manufacturer is how the market is going to view your business in its current condition, mm-hmm. right? Some people come to us and they're either seeking a partner or they're seeking to sell, mm-hmm. and they think they're ready to go to market. But as we start to do a SWOT analysis, we start to look to do evaluation on the company, to study where their position in the marketplace, often we say to them, you're not ready yet. Mm-hmm. You need to correct this, this, and this. Mm. And if you do it, you can increase the valuation by 25-35% or more.
Wow.
I mean, we've seen incredible changes in valuation through early analysis. The earlier they prepare and understand how the market views them, mm-hmm. Find out before you need to go to market.
Yeah.
Like, more than a year in advance. We love when people come to us. Often we're working with manufacturers 3 years in advance of them going to market.
Wow. And following, it's almost like a continuum of care.
it truly is. Yeah. And I love that we can change. Sometimes they're ready to go to market immediately.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're not, we can truly move the needle on value mm-hmm. and outcome. And for many of them, if they are selling, it's the largest transaction of their life.
Yeah.
And it affects how they live in retirement. Mm-hmm. Plan early is the advice.
Now, you've built a very successful career, but every leader encounters obstacles. What have been some of the most difficult personal or professional challenges you've faced throughout your career? And what did those experiences teach you?
I think probably the biggest challenge was navigating growth. Mm. So navigating growth was navigating changes to people, to process, to the tools we use. The skill set that it takes to sell a sub $5 million revenue company and the skill set to sell a $75 million revenue company mm-hmm. is completely different. So we had to navigate living in a different world, different language, different procedures, different everything. Mm-hmm. And some of the people that were with me early on, people don't like change. They do not like change. Mm. And so you have to develop, and this is true for my company, it's true for manufacturing companies, develop a culture of continual improvement and you'll land in a good place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that was truly, I think, the largest hurdle was navigating the growth and being willing to invest in people, invest in process, be open to change, and question everything,
mm-hmm.
you know?
What misconceptions do people still have about manufacturing, and what do you wish more Americans understood about the opportunities available in this sector, in this nation?
Yeah. I think there's been, over the course of decades, a push for young people to go into what was perceived as white-collar careers. Today, manufacturing is a high-tech industry. It's incredibly high-tech. And the other thing I would say is there are so many more job functions available within the manufacturing community that are not necessarily manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
They're advertising, they're marketing, they're HR. I think, young people coming out of college that are having difficulty finding places to work, consider applying to manufacturing companies.
Yeah.
There are fabulous career paths available.
Yeah, and the Lehigh Valley actually has an initiative in place called What's So Cool About Manufacturing that kind of goes into these manufacturing businesses and details exactly that. So that's hopefully we're making that case here in the Lehigh Valley.
Yeah. I love that program, by the way.
Which I think is actually a program that has been rolled out across many states,
yeah.
if not all states. So, yeah, we're really proud of it. I want to shift gears one more time here because we only have a few minutes left in the program. Integrity has been at the core of, you know, how you've built the business. And your company openly embraces a faith-centered approach to business. How has your faith influenced your leadership style and the way you make decisions?
It's affected every ounce of it. I am I'm a believer in, like, for instance, in staff development. Like, you cannot expect something from your staff that you're not willing to be open to change, be open to growth. Mm-hmm. You be open to growth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to be operating with integrity. Mean what you say. Say what you mean. Your behavior has to be consistent. I often think of there are many people that go to church on a Sunday, but their Monday through Saturday life is not congruent with what they say they believe. My Bible calls that a hypocrite. Jersey girl speak. I tell it like it is. But that's, integrity is incredibly important to me.
And it's important not only for faith, but it's also important for business.
Yes.
Yeah. Fran, your story reminds us that leadership isn't simply about building businesses. It's about building trust, creating opportunities, preserving legacies, and helping others navigate some of the most important transitions of their lives. Your passion for manufacturing, your commitment to integrity, and your faith-driven approach to leadership offer valuable lessons for entrepreneurs, business owners, and leaders across the industry. Thank you for sharing your journey and your wisdom and your vision for the future of American manufacturing. And thank you to our listeners for joining us on another episode of Trailblazers. Until next time, keep leading, keep growing, and keep blazing new trails. Thanks again, Fran.
Thank you. Thank you again for having me. It was fun.
Yeah.